The debate over fire retardants in clothing and furniture has flared up again, prompted by a new investigative series from the Chicago Tribune that describes a decades-long deceptive campaign created by big tobacco and the chemical industry and fronted by a phony consumer watchdog group and unwitting fire marshals to create a false fear of flammable furniture in order to load it with toxic flame retardants that don't even work, rewarding the chemical industry and distracting the public from the real culprit, burning cigarettes. Phew, it's a complicated web, and there's a lot to the series. We'll link you at hereandnow.org. Patricia Callahan is one of the reporters. She joins us from WBEZ in Chicago. Patricia, did I get that about right?
You sure did.
Take us through the history you found here, starting with the cigarette industry. How do you trace this back to the cigarette industry?
Well, decades ago, cigarettes left smoldering were starting fires, and those fires were killing people, thousands of people every year. And so there were calls as early as the 1920s to change cigarettes so that they'd go out on their own. But the cigarette industry didn't want to do that. And what they did was they had sort of a two-pronged approach. They said they couldn't change cigarettes. They couldn't alter the cigarette in a way that anybody would want to smoke it. And they worked to shift the focus from the cigarettes that were sparking the fires to the couches and chairs that were going up in flames.
And how did they do that?
They realized they had a credibility problem. And so they worked to recruit others with a lot more credibility to do the arguing for them. And so they poured millions of dollars into fire service groups in an effort to get folks who work for fire safety for a living to argue on their behalf. And what's surprising is they succeeded. They planted a man inside the National Association of State Fire Marshals. And that tobacco consultant was being paid $200 an hour by the Tobacco Institute.
Well, this is Peter Sparber. He is a former tobacco executive. They not only planted him inside the National Association of State Fire Marshals, he helped organize it. He was paid by the industry, and fire marshals didn't know this. They thought it was volunteer work, but as I'm reading this, I'm thinking, well, how can that be that state officials, public officials, are joining an organization and no one knows who's behind it?
Well, they thought they were forming their own organization, and here this former tobacco executive was volunteering to help them. I mean, he was providing their talking points, he was steering their agenda, he was helping them line up speakers, and he was feeding them the tobacco line the whole time.
Which is that cigarettes don't cause fires, furniture that burns causes fires.
It wasn't that they argued that cigarettes don't cause fires. They just argued that the better way to address the problem was to have flame retardant furniture.
So now enter all these chemicals into our furniture, into baby equipment. By the way, we should say not everyone in the firefighting community is on board. There were those who said flame retardants cause more toxic smoke.
Absolutely. And indeed, the tobacco industry eventually lost this battle and did have to change cigarettes to make them less likely to start fires. But what's fascinating about this is that Peter Sparber and the fire marshals then went over and helped out the chemical companies.
But before we get to that, tell us what started to happen here. You've got this lobbying organization. You've got suddenly chemicals pouring into American products. How many chemicals? And what do the science and research start to say about the effects of retardants?
The chemicals have been linked to all kinds of problems, to cancer, neurological deficits, developmental problems, impaired fertility. So really, you know, some really serious things. And the sort of first warning alarm about this was in the late 90s, a study out of Sweden unexpectedly found it in breast milk. And from there on out, people started finding it all over the place.
Because it's what? It's getting into dust that will then, when you sit on a couch for poof, we all know that like sort of wave of dust that comes up, that's got chemicals in it?
Yeah, it's microscopically migrating from the products in dust. And in fact, toddlers, you know, when you think about it, they play on the floor, they put things in their mouths. They have far higher levels of these chemicals in their bodies than adults do for that very reason.
Well, but we should say that people in the chemical and fire industry can also have been pointing to a 1980s report saying that these fire retardants weren't that bad. You tracked down the author of that report. What did he say?
the chemical industry sent us this study saying, hey, this proves that flame retardants work, they work well, and they provide a 15-fold escape time increase. So in other words, you have 15 times more time to get out in a fire. So we talked to him, and he said the way that flame retardants are used in household furniture is completely ineffective. And what he said is by the time the flames get to the furniture, the fire just laughs at it.
And yet, the lobbying continues, not just with organizations, but experts who are enlisted. Dr. David Heimbach was paid to speak to California lawmakers who are considering a bill to reduce flame retardants. And he told a story about a baby girl burned in her crib. The fire started by a candle, not a cigarette. His testimony, in part, helped that bill be killed at that time. But what did you find out about these anecdotal stories about children being burned?
Well, he testified in California and a number of other places, and I noticed in the testimony that the details about the children had changed, but they'd all been burned in this horrible way by a candle. And when I looked into it, I found that the babies he described didn't exist. There was a child who was burned, who was treated at his hospital, but she was not burned by a candle, and fire retardants played no role in her burns.
Meaning that she would have been burned anyway. I think it was electrical wiring.
It was an overloaded, overheated extension cord. So it had nothing to do with, he had said that she was on a pillow that lacked flame retardants and had implied that that was, you know, partly why she was burned. But there was no pillow. There was no crib. I should also tell you that he later came back to us and said, well, I deliberately changed facts about her case to protect her medical privacy. But he changed the facts and he added new ones that really worked to the advantage of the chemical industry, the flame retardant industry that was paying him.
Well, meanwhile, you mentioned the group Citizens for Fire Safety Institute. It presents itself as an organization of firefighters and burn doctors, you know, people on the ground in the firefighting industry. But instead, it's really a trade association of the biggest flame retardant manufacturers. How else were they stymieing legislation?
I mean, they were presenting themselves as this sort of apple pie group. You know, if you go to their website, you'll see five smiling children holding this banner that's handwritten. It says fire safety with a little heart dotting the I. And yet, you know, we call them a front group. I mean, the records clearly show that they are funded by the three largest makers of flame retardant chemicals in the world.
And one of them is Chemtura. Their spokesperson, John Gustafson, says flame retardants provide an essential tool to enable manufacturers to meet fire safety codes to protect life and property. But of course, there's some circular thinking here because the chemical industry helped establish those fire safety codes requiring flame retardants. We're talking to Patricia Callahan, one of the reporters on the Chicago Tribune series on flame retardants. Nick Kristoff writes in the New York Times, if you want a case study of everything that's wrong with money politics, this is it. But maybe you have a different opinion. Have you seen flame retardants save a life, stop a flame? Let us know your thoughts at hereandnow.org. We're going to be back with why chemical companies think this is a civil rights issue. That's in 1 minute, here and now. Welcome back. A recent investigative series in the Chicago Tribune has put flame retardants back in the news, chemicals linked with cancer that the chemical and tobacco industry lobbied to get added to furniture and electronics, going so far as paying a former tobacco executive, Peter Sparber, to organize and run a fire marshals organization, paying doctors like David Heimbach to testify about burned children, when research showed, as one scientist said, fire laughs at these retardants, but they can leach into the air or make smoke from fires more toxic. Patricia Callahan helped report the series. Patricia, why do we have these retardants? Is it the law?
The reason that we have so many flame retardants in our homes is not because of a federal law. It's actually because of an obscure California regulation that dates back to 1975. And it was because those regulators in California were so frustrated with the fact that so many of their residents were dying in cigarette fires that they tried to fireproof the world around the cigarette. And they did it by coming up with this regulation for furniture. The furniture that I'm sitting on in the studio in Chicago meets that California regulation. Yeah. So it's become kind of a de facto standard for the nation.
Because as you write, furniture makers don't want to make one set of furniture for California and one for the rest of the country. So they, as goes California, they all win.
Exactly. So a lot of the efforts around changing this are centered in California. There are very strong efforts afoot to get the California agency that came up with that regulation to change.
Well, the chemical industry, you write, is fighting those efforts. One of their arguments is that flame retardants are a civil rights issue. For instance, they brought African-American school children to testify in favor of flame retardants. Why? Why do they say it's a civil rights issue?
They argue that because poor minority children are more likely to die in fires, that if you take flame retardants away or you limit their use in any way, that young African-American children are going to burn to death in fires. And yet there was a study just last week that kind of turned this issue around a little bit, in that it showed that African-American and Latino toddlers have significantly higher levels of these toxic flame retardants in their bodies than white children do. So the issue is, if the fire just laughs at these flame retardants in furniture, how would they better protect any one race of children than another?
Well, and in fact, it's become kind of knowledge that all cotton is healthier for a child. In other words, there is a movement among parents to look at the label and not buy clothing or furniture that has fire retardants in it. But if you're not educated about that, you wouldn't know that. You know, if you've had a fire in a building and a child has died, you're of course going to think that this is going to be better for them to have fire retardant.
Sure. Well, it's a very powerful argument. I mean, obviously no one wants to seem like they're opposed to, you know, protecting vulnerable kids of any race. So it is one of their most powerful arguments to suggest that any vote to scale back the use of flame retardants would disproportionately hurt young African-American kids.
And let's just be clear here. Did you find any case where it's been demonstrated that fire retardants saved lives?
Well, we were looking more at the science. What does the science say about how they work in furniture? And the folks whose studies they point to saying they work said they don't. So, I mean, the very experts that they directed us to saying this proves that flame retardants in furniture work said they just don't work. They're not. By the time the fire gets to the foam where the flame retardants, you know, reside, it overpowers them. And so they're not protecting you in any meaningful way.
Well, it's getting me thinking, you know, when you cover fires, you see the aftermath of fires. You're not seeing furniture standing there unscathed.
Yeah,
it's burned.
Well,
yeah, it's burned.
And when government scientists looked at the same question, when it comes to household furniture, they said the same thing, that these flame retardants don't protect you in any meaningful way. And in fact, they may be exposing people to health harm.
Because of the toxins in the smoke, which comes first.
Or because of the toxins, you know, just because they wind up in your body.
Right, and right. Before you, whether or not you have a fire.
Exactly.
But where's the EPA on this? You know, why has this been allowed to happen?
What we found was that the EPA has allowed generation after generation of these chemicals on the market without really thoroughly screening them. And that's the way the federal law works. The federal law that governs toxic substances makes it next to impossible for the EPA to ban something, to the degree that the EPA wasn't able to ban asbestos, you know, a known carcinogen that has killed a whole lot of people.
Yeah. Patricia Callahan, again of the Chicago Tribune, their series has sort of jump-started again this conversation about fire retardants. Where are we now? Senator Dick Durbin spoke about this on the floor. He talked about giving a bottle to his grandchildren and sitting on the couch and now realizing the toxins that are in it. He says, as a result of your series, he thinks about flame retardants all the time. The European Union has banned a common flame retardant, but still, here in the U.S., where, you know, infants have the highest concentrations of these chemicals in their blood in the world, there is a law stalled a year ago, designed by Frank Lautenberg, and it's stalled in Congress. What are you hearing? Do you think there will be a shift? And also, where are we on the lobbyists who brought us to this point? The fire marshals at this point surely must know that the man who organized them years ago was in fact a representative of the tobacco industry and paid by the tobacco industry. They must know that now.
As far as the fire marshals go, they, executive director of that group told me that they hadn't worked with Peter Sparber in a number of years,
and that this is all history. But what I found, though, was that the fire marshals at that very same hearing that Dr. Heimbach told these very dramatic tales of babies that that didn't exist, the fire marshals wrote a letter to that same committee, and a lobbyist for that same front group read the fire marshals' excerpts from the fire marshals' letter to and it helped defeat that bill, which would have scaled back the use of flame retardants in American homes. So in that regard, I think that they have remained involved in this issue. As far as the federal legislation goes, it's really a good question. I mean, there's certainly big efforts afoot to try and revive that legislation. There was a rally in Washington to try and get people fired up about Senator Lautenberg's bill. And certainly Senator Durbin is pressing to get some Republican co-sponsors of it. But so far, it's really hard to tell whether it'll go anywhere.
That's Patricia Callahan, a part of the team with Sam Rowe and Michael Hawthorne that wrote the recent series in the Chicago Tribune on flame retardants. We'll link you at hereandnow.org. Patricia, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Okay, we're up against a break. Latest news is next, Here and Now.